I'm sure every one of you are familiar with the story from Greek mythology about the ancient city of Troy holding off the Greeks for 10 long years. Well, it appeared after this prolonged period of time that the Spartans had finally given up. They had finally been beaten, but as they departed, they left behind a huge wooden horse outside the gates of Troy. They left behind this Trojan horse. Well, the citizens of Troy decided, well, let's bring this horse inside the city walls, unaware that inside there were 30 Greek soldiers. Well, that night they emerged, these soldiers, they killed the guards, and they opened the city gates for the waiting Greek army, who entered and massacred the citizens of Troy. What a sad ending to that story. I think of the 10 years of effort to keep the Spartans at bay, and because they let down their guard, they lost. Their city was destroyed. In our study today, Israel was also defeated, and the cause of their defeat was also hidden within their camp. He was a man named Achan. This obedient warrior's name was Achan. And the name Achan means trouble or troubler. And how he troubled Israel. In fact, this descendant of Judah began the canonization of Israel. He started Israel down the path of paganism and idolatry. What an awful legacy. Now, before we unfold this tragic story, I want us to realize the amount of damage a disobedient warrior can cause when his decision-making is outside the will of God, when his faith is not marked by God's presence, by discipline, by patience, by assurance, which all lead to triumph. And we saw that last week. We saw what happened when a warrior's faith truly was placed in God. God gave a tremendous victory as the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. But what a difference there is when there's disobedience versus obedience. I think of Abraham and his disobedience in Egypt. It almost cost him the life of his wife. I think of David's disobedience and taking an unauthorized census. It led to the death of 70,000 people. I think of Jonah. About a month or two ago, we were studying Jonah. His initial refusal to obey God's command to go to Nineveh almost sank a ship full of sailors. And I think of the Church of Jesus Christ today. It must look diligently, lest any root of bitterness springing up not only trouble the embittered, but defile the many around him. Friends, a little leaven does leaven the whole lump. Please believe it's dangerous to live with unresolved issues which lead to unconfessed and unforsaken sin. Well, we come now to the story of Israel's first and only military defeat in their conquest of Canaan, which occurred because Achan saw, Achan coveted, and Achan took that which belonged not to him but to God, which brought not only defeat to Israel but death to himself, to his family, and even to some Israelites. What a grievous and costly chapter in this man's life and in the life of Israel. Which tells me sin in the heart of the believer cannot be trifled with. It cannot be simply dismissed. Its consequences are deadly. The effects are long-lasting, and its repercussions adversely impact others. How I live affects you. How you live affects me. How we live affects this body of believers. Now, chapter 6 ends on a note of victory. Verse 27 tells us, "So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised. It was spread through all the country." Did you hear what the God of Israel did to Jericho? Israel's success in battle was striking greater and greater fear in the hearts of the enemy. But then we come to chapter 7, which begins with the word but. But the children of Israel committed a trespass. And here we see Israel's victory at Jericho now giving way to their coming defeat at the city of Ai, and how this tragic turn of events shows us that following a victory is when we most need to be on our guard. Psalm 2:11 says, "Rejoice with trembling." I say how we need the grace of God to save us from turning divine blessings into curses. Deuteronomy 32 says of Israel, "But Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxed fat, thou art grown thick, thou art covered with fatness." Notice then, after God blessed Israel, what happened? Then he or they forsook God, which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. Friends, unless we are poor in spirit and small in our own eyes, our spiritual victory will be followed by a heartbreaking, unexpected defeat. Now, specifically, let's examine this dreadful defeat by looking first at the man responsible, this disobedient warrior. So our first point is the disobedient warrior, or the heart of the disobedient warrior. Notice verse 1, "But the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing for Achan the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed thing." Achan stole that which belonged to God. Now, the Hebrew verbal form of the noun translated trespass originally meant to cover as a garment. But here it came to mean a deceitful act or a misappropriation of property considered sacred. Now, it is significant that the same word was used in its Greek form to describe the sin, the transgression of Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5, when they did what? They stole from God. And so I think we can say God doesn't take lightly when we steal from him. Now, let's think about Achan's sin. It was committed in the environment of Jericho, immediately following God's miraculous victory in which he caused its walls to fall down flat. It was committed under the floodlight of God's grace. It was committed as he witnessed the glorious might of the Lord. It was committed with Achan's eyes being wide open. He knew exactly what he was doing. And he still did it. He deliberately stole from God. He knew that he was committing a trespass against God, but again, he still did it. For in connection with Jericho's destruction, specific instructions had been given to Israel regarding what they were not to do. And if you look back at chapter 6, verses 17 through 19, we find what God had told Israel when they overran Jericho, what they were not then to do. Verse 17, "And the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that were sent. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when ye take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and the gold and the vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord." And so Achan's sin was a heinous act of sacrilege. because he took that which was consecrated to the Lord. He took that which belonged to God. The contents of Jericho were to be given to the Lord as the first fruits of the land. Just as the first fruits of a crop given to the Lord pointed to more crops to come, so the conquest of Jericho signified that Israel would receive all of Canaan from him. But God said, I want Jericho first. I want you to give me Jericho. Then I'll give you the rest of the land. And so again, no spoils from Jericho were to be taken by Israel. And then the people of Jericho, along with their animals, were to be killed. And why such judgment? Because their cup of iniquity was now full. Full with the evil of incest, adultery, child sacrifice, homosexuality, bestiality. And then the silver, the gold, the bronze, the iron were to be set apart for the Lord's treasury. All of that was to be given to the Lord. Now, if perchance some Israelite should prove unfaithful in carrying out this divine order, then Israel itself would become open for destruction, because God regarded Israel as a unit, which meant what one individual did in trespassing against the Lord affected the whole congregation. Because Achan committed the accursed thing, he took what belonged to God. The end of verse 1 says, and the anger of the Lord was kindled not only against Achan, but against the children of Israel. And certainly, we find its parallel in the New Testament. Regarding the local church, we must realize when one member sins, all the members suffer with him. Which tells us we are not islands to ourselves. My sins, your sins, as was the case with Achan's sins, trouble the whole church, the whole family. Isn't it true when there's one family member out of sorts, it affects the whole family? Absolutely. So when one of us is out of sorts, it's going to affect the West Side family. Look again at verse 18 of Joshua 6. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves a curse when ye take of the accursed thing. And notice, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. You don't want to make trouble for your family, for the family of God. You don't want to be a disobedient warrior. Well, we come to point number 2, and that's the defeated army. Because there was a disobedient warrior, he brought to pass a defeated army. Verse 2, and Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven, on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. And the men went up and viewed Ai. Ai was the next city on Israel's path of conquest. And yes, it was smaller than Jericho, but it was at a strategic junction of two natural routes ascending from Jericho to the hill country around Bethel. And so defeating Ai would then lead to the ultimate control of this main ridge route running from north to south along the central highlands. Well, like every good commander, Joshua surveyed his situation before he planned his strategy. Remember, Proverbs 20:18 states, every purpose is established by counsel, and with good advice, make war. And in making the necessary preparations for the next battle, he sent spies 10 miles west, almost directly west, from Jericho to Ai. Now, what counsel did these spies bring back? After they scouted the city of Ai, what report did they bring back to Joshua? Notice verse 3. And they returned to Joshua and said unto him, let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up, and Smite AI. That's all you need, just about 2,000 or 3,000. Make not all the people to labor there thither, for they are but few. Now, no doubt, the impressive victory at Jericho had given Joshua and Israel a great deal of confidence. And with confidence often comes prideful self-sufficiency. And what this self-confidence is leaning on one's own understanding always leads to is presumption. We say, we got this. This one's in the bag, which now was Israel's mindset. Victory seemed a sure